everybody. This is Armand Demel.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you with the Positive Mind, WBAI. And that's better. 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we are going to continue our talk about depression. Depression, a fascinating thing, because you think of depression as this. Well, how did you describe it before? How do people mostly perceive?
What I said before, Armand, is that depression is perceived as a pathological manifestation, and it's always perceived as a problem, as something to be absolutely avoided or eliminated. And that makes it even more difficult for people who suffer from it.
In a way, depression should be avoided and eliminated. However, the thought that there is practically a will that goes behind the depression, that depression is really a matter of the weak-willed. In fact, women are often perceived as it's okay for women to get depressed, but if a man is depressed, it's perceived as not masculine?
Right. It seems that depression is a disorder that is almost considered normal for a woman to be at least mildly depressed. But a man is perceived as less masculine if he complains of depression. So actually a lot of men suffer with depression without saying anything, without seeking help.
They hide their depression.
Because they feel that they would be perceived as less masculine. You know, Armand, I wanted to say that there's this Darwinian medicine. Darwinian medicine is, I find it fascinating. It's kind of the counterpart of evolutionary psychology in the sense that Darwinian medicine takes into account disorders of the body, of physiological, biochemical disorders, not just as an illness, but as possibly an adaptation.
And that's what we're going to cover with you today. We're going to look at the evolution of depression. And so we set out on our merry way to go find out where this came from and why. Why are people, how did it serve nature? How did it serve Homo sapiens? How did it serve our species to have depression as one of the available tools?
Mm.
You know, and that's a real question. What else are we going to pick? We know if you get tired, you go to sleep. We know sometimes if you catch a bug, you'll lay down and you'll rest your body. We know if you have certain muscle aches, you're going to kind of rest until you feel better. What is depression doing here? So this is a big question. The big question is, whose big idea was this?
Mm-hmm. So what we started with was, okay, so a low mood, a mood that doesn't allow a person to move around a whole lot, is, for instance, conservation of resources, is less expenditure of energy, makes the person less visible and therefore less of a threat of a predator seeing you and catching you. So there are a number of possibilities as to why depression could have been a very important strategy for early people.
Let's back that up just a minute. What we're saying is that early people, animals, may have chosen depression, and that's what we're saying, but nobody would choose depression. They would choose to skulk lower. They would choose to hide better. So we want to know what in nature said, why did nature say, no, we can't trust that you're going to be a better skulker and a better hider and have less energy and more conservative. Nature said we're going to work on the very inside of your body, mixing your hormones with your neurotransmitters, and we're going to tune them to where you could barely pick your head up off the ground. Mm-hmm. We're going to do that at certain times. Why would nature do that? Let's take a look at the first the survival of the species. How would that have served humankind to have depression available?
Right, and it isn't just the biochemistry, it's actually the structure of the nervous system that becomes shaped in such a way that it fosters depression. In the long run, at first it may just be the chemicals, the neurotransmitters, the hormones, but then as it sets in and stays in the individual, it becomes a structural, a permanent structure of the nervous system.
Here I am, I'm a gorilla and I'm the head of my pack.
There's one theory that is called the rank theory, and let's start with that one. That one says that humans are group animals, primates. A human alone is a human in danger. A human alone is not able to protect him or herself very well, is not able to access resources, food, water. A human alone is a human who is, in nature, in the nervous system of human beings, aloneness has been rejected consistently throughout evolution as the least desirable kind of life.
Yeah, well, you're certainly not going to pass on the genes if you're alone.
But I mean more than that. It really, in the nervous system of human beings, sociality is fostered. Not just mating, not just sex, but engaging in all kinds of activities with a group of individuals.
Humans depend on each other.
Depend on the
and
group.
And they need to have a group around.
Group.
Right.
Okay. So in the group.
Oh, so this brings us to that whole theory of depression being a loss of family, which you had before. Boy,
right.
We got so much to say about this.
Right. So let's start with the rank theory.
Sure.
The rank theory says in a group there has to be a leader. There has to be a dominant individual who takes on responsibility and takes on the decision making, etc. So often,
let's describe dominant.
Yes,
Roberta,
let's
okay?
describe dominance.
We talk about dominance often enough. People
right.
think dominance is you bop somebody over the head.
Dominance in bopping.
That's the definition in the dictionary. Dominance,
right.
When you bop somebody over the head and say, I'm the boss.
That's from the Webster Dictionary we just found. Dominance is often perceived as a sexual kind of stance, but it's much more than that. It can be sexual, but it's actually dominance is a kind of relationship, is an expression of a relationship that a person has with his or her environment and the objects and resources contained therein, as well as with the individuals in his or her environment. And dominance involves not the need to bop people over the heads, well, or maybe that too, but that's one form of dominance. But actually, dominance involves a sense of responsibility for the well-being of all those who fall within the territory of the dominant individual.
And many of you know who have become boss. You suddenly become responsible for your employees.
You feel responsible.
And you feel the responsibility. And so you just thought it would be nice and easy. I'll be at the top of my firm.
You feel protective.
And you feel protective.
And you want to make sure that everyone gets a chance to express, you know, whatever they need to express, and that they get what they need. And that
And you have to buy insurance to keep your firm going, which is what? Well, actually, we bought insurance right through the beginning of mankind. Insurance means we got to keep the other hominids away from coming in. We got to keep the animals from eating the people around here. Insurance is protection.
And all that falls on the leader in terms of making sure that the protective structures and the supportive structures do function. And so that's why people in a group respect and honor the leader, because they see that this is the one who takes on that much more responsibility. So that's how we define dominance. We just want to make sure that we understand what we're talking about.
It has to do with territory.
Yes,
dominance is, I'm in charge of this neighborhood.
It has to do with territory, because hominids develop as strong and as powerful and as important and as essential a relationship with their territory, the place they inhabit, as they do with the people in it. Mm. There is an interaction that happens with the territory that goes so deep that it becomes, you know, affective, it becomes emotional. In fact, just the other day I was talking to a dear friend of mine from Italy, and she was crying thinking about her land and how she left it when she was a child. It's still a wound that's open in her psyche because we bond with the territory. We bond with the place that we inhabit. It becomes an extension of us.
Let's get back to depression now. Depression relates to this because we have to assume in any group there is a territory, there's a group of people, and there's somebody in charge.
Right.
Now, what does depression have to do with this? Well, right? What good is depression?
There.
Okay?
So,
according to the rank theory.
Rank theory. So, here we have a group in a territory. People are dependent on the territory for survival. So, how the resources are managed is decided by the group. And the leader is... There has to be a person in charge, and if someone were to challenge that person, there is a conflict within the group. In a conflict, there has to be a winner and a loser. That's true just by definition. And so the winner, in terms of the chemistry of winning, the winner goes into a kind of mania, and the loser, we found, goes into a kind of depression. This is biochemistry now we're talking about.
Now, just think about a gorilla. Every time, if you saw King Kong recently, as soon as he wins a battle, he beats his chest and he roars at the top
That's
of his...
That's mania.
Right? Here it is. Roar!
Just like
you
that.
Know, and right? Now, that kind of thing, what's he making such a big noise? He won the battle.
Mm.
But it's a feeling. It's a feeling, a surge of chemicals
mm-hmm.
that say to you, I
epinephrine
am
and dopamine, yes,
powerful.
And serotonin,
right?
All of them.
All of these things are rushing through him.
In
now,
abundance.
Meanwhile, he doesn't want to get rid of the loser. The loser is part of the pack, you know.
Oh, the loser is necessary.
You know, as somebody once said, Latsu. Said, you don't win when you beat your enemy. It's when you get your enemy to work for you that you become the winner.
Right.
See, so now he beats up this other guy, and what's in effect he says? He says, I'm the leader of the pack. I'm the dominant one. My genes get passed on to the other females. Your genes don't. But you've got to stay in the pack.
And I'll feed you.
And I'll feed you.
Right.
So how does that guy who just got beat up stick around? He
right.
must feel terrible, right?
So, and nature says, okay, let's help this guy along by giving him a chemistry, him or her, a chemistry that suits this rank, this role. This role is just as necessary as the leader role, mind you. It's not that it's not necessary. It's because the leader alone does not lead anyone, and therefore it defeats the purpose. So, but the chemistry of losing appears, you know, to foster depression because it diminishes the output of all the neurotransmitters that fosters this kind of outgoing behavior that Armand was just describing. And so the depressed person needs to tone down, needs to move less, needs to use less, needs to make less noise.
And especially not think of re-challenging
and
the boys.
Exactly. And especially not engage in conflict again. Why? Because if you continuously engage in conflict within the group, there's no time or resources for activities that are more important, like foraging for food and like making sure that everything's taken care of. And so there is a loss of resources for the entire group if the conflict keeps repeating. But
right.
if the
now,
person
Roberta,
stays depressed, the conflict is not likely to keep happening.
Well said. Now, I get the point. You get a guy who looks at his boss, or looks at the bigger gorilla, or looks at the larger hominid, or Neanderthal, whichever it is, and says, I'm going to be in charge. And so he challenges because he wants the girls, right? You can't really have the ladies unless you take over. That's the way nature built us. they said to the biggest male gets the women, smaller males do not. And there's a whole thing about this that is fascinating about smaller men. But anyway, the depressed male, he's depressed. Now, if you think about it in your family, every young man, sometimes young men feel this way towards their fathers. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to challenge their fathers, but the dads don't allow them to challenge. They squelch them, they squash them, they push them down.
Yeah.
And they squash them so fast that the kid wants to still be part of the family. He's an essential part of the family. How does he deal with it? He depresses himself.
Sure.
Depression very often is anger, aggression, turned off.
Mm-hmm. It's a rebellion that cannot be expressed through active rebelliousness, and so it becomes like a lack of cooperation.
And you become rebellious, but you're still in the family, and you're still a part of the family.
Right.
And depression serves. But now tell me, this kind of makes sense. Why are most women depressed?
Mm-hmm.
According to the evolution theory, and I'm not saying that this is true now, but according to rank theory, therefore, no woman was allowed to say no.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the question you just asked, Armand, is not one that I can answer in a simple sentence. But I believe that women's depression stems in a way from the same kind of dynamic, meaning that women very often have not been allowed, for instance, to go to school, to educate themselves, to be out in the world, to pursue the things that they may have wanted to pursue. They may have not had enough freedom. They may not have had enough, you know. So I think that in many cases, women's depression has been a behavior that has been reinforced because men have selected depressed women. Men have selected women that are less combative, less belligerent, less dominant, because it's more convenient to have a woman who's obedient and who says, sure, I'll do whatever you say and, you know, I'll shut up, rather than to have a woman who says, no, I'm going to do my own thing my own way. So I think that in women, depression has been selected for and encouraged and fostered. In men, it hasn't been selected for, quite the opposite. In fact, those who reproduce are those who are not depressed. That's according to evolution. Today it's different, though.
If you own a factory and you have a bunch of men working in your factory who are working on your assembly line, it's okay if they're depressed. To the boss.
Right. No, it's better, actually.
It's better if they're depressed,
actually,
because we don't want them standing up and saying, what am I doing on this assembly line?
And it's easy enough to make people depressed. I mean, you did a program on the Stanford prison experiment. All you have to do is treat people like they're worthless and remove their freedoms and dehumanize them, depersonalize them, and they get depressed.
So take a look. If you're in a dominant society, if you're in a society where there tends to be a dominance, and now I'm going to talk a little bit about slave populations, you know,
mm-hmm.
about how an entire group of slaves were kept depressed.
Right.
Just as we saw during the Second World War, where the Jews were depressed, you know, behind the Nazi regime, as the Nazis were out there, you know, pushing people down. What was it that enabled the mind to get this depression? What was it? Were they thinking survival, or was just some kind of chemistry working to say, you got to keep yourself down, you got to make yourself invisible, because if you stick up your head, they're going to lynch you. If you pick up your head, they're going to shoot you.
Right. I think in that case, where you have genocide, what the genocidal people do is go in and prevent the males in a group of people from having access to their women and to their resources. And when the males are emasculated in this way, then the whole society becomes depressed.
And becomes docile.
Docile. But there's a proverb that I learned from a friend from the Ukraine that says, if you keep your head low, the sword will not behead you. And that's what you were saying, that depression in let's say for the people in Berlin in 1938, depression could have served the purpose of surviving, whereas someone who was more belligerent might have gotten killed right away the moment that everything broke out. You know what
so,
I mean?
So let's say that you're in a lower class economic group. You feel angry. The color of your skin is prejudiced against. People are kind of aiming at you. You just feel angry. You want to rip somebody's head off. But the man has the law on his side. Anything you do is considered a crime. How do you make yourself depressed when you're angry and rebellious? And you know, here is the growth. This is the remarkable thing. Because we're going to see the real truth behind the success of the fast food industry.
Mm-hmm. Sure, you eat donuts. Meaning that when we perceive that...
And the word donut is like do not.
Mm-hmm.
Do not.
Very good. Very, very
it's
good.
It's almost
yes.
spelled that way, but it's close.
But it's close enough. So when you perceive, psychologically now, you perceive that you have no way out, you have no choice. No matter what you do, you're going to be stifled and prejudiced against and mistreated and misunderstood. And that if you try to fight the system, you might get killed, then depression is the best sometimes the best strategy. How do you keep yourself depressed if you are a healthy 18-year-old male with lots of muscles and energy and strong
and
brilliant?
See, you see the injustice, and you see the injustice, right. And you see the injustice to your own family,
right.
And you want to fight for your family,
right. So
and you know that if you get out there and fight, they're going to chop your head off and your family's going to be left without protection.
Right.
How do you do it? Well,
you choose.
The man does a good thing. He makes available to you a number of things to get you to create your depression.
But I think that it's interesting also that you choose them.
Yes, and you choose them, of course.
You still have a choice, and yet you choose the way the rebelliousness and the anger turn to the self, in the sense that we make ourselves depressed by eating the foods that destroy our nervous system, that atrophy the neurons and the dendrites, and so we get depressed by selecting the foods and becoming addicted to the foods and the drinks that keep us depressed, that make us depressed and keep us depressed.
I mean, we'll start off with the big ones. The big one are easy. Why in the inner cities do we always find drugs?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Drugs, right there, heroin and stuff is available and crack is available to who? To the people who feel the most angry and the most rebellious. How do you keep yourself down? You pick up a drug. Mm-hmm. Why do you pick up a drug? Cigarettes.
Right.
There would have been no success for cigarette addiction if it weren't to control anger. Ask anybody who ever stopped smoking what happens when they stop smoking.
Right.
They get angry.
Mm-hmm.
You control your anger, and who gives you the cigarettes? Of course, the people in charge lay those cigarettes out for you, and they lay the drugs out for you, so you're going to stay depressed.
Yep. And the part that's interesting is not only are we given these things that make us depressed, but we choose them, we take them, we want them, we ask for them, we demand them, because if we perceive that our only option is to lay low, well, we're not going to want to feel good and be healthy and strong, because what are we going to do with that health and strength? We're going to kill ourselves. You see, to be healthy and have a lot of energy in a place where moving around is dangerous and showing up is dangerous is not a good idea.
So they open a McDonald's in Harlem. And it becomes one of the famous, best, most, people flock to it, mm-hmm. like bees to a honey. Why? Roberta's saying, because somehow unconsciously you knew if you ingested that food, rather than the available vegetables that
right.
are there or anything more
Which
natural.
Which are available, right. They are available, yes.
Right,
there
you could have
choice.
Had all that stuff, but why does your body bring you to that
mm-hmm.
thing? Well, what about a McDonald's hamburger is so appealing to depression?
Well, it's a numbing food. It's a numbing food because it is loaded with chemicals. It is not very nutritious. It alters the balance of neurotransmitters and hormones. And it has a lot of salt and fat and sugar so that the taste buds are rewarded in the moment. It's immediate gratification and numbness.
And what does it do to your nervous system?
It curtails it. It prunes it. It destroys it. It's toxic. It destroys the neurons and dendrites. And so you've accomplished your goal.
Well, how do you destroy neurons and dendrites with a McDonald's
you
hamburger?
Do in a very simple way. I don't want to brand name anyone, but you know, that kind of food is not easily dealt with by the liver, so the liver is not able to cleanse out of the blood all of the toxins that come from that food, and so the liver becomes burdened with all this toxic stuff, and then the liver is not able to remove the toxins from the blood, so they reach the brain. Toxins reach the brain. And when they're in the brain is so delicate. The brain is so fragile. In fact, that's why it's contained inside that box, because it's so fragile. And that's why it's protected by the three meninges and all kinds of barriers and protective things, because it's very, very delicate. So the toxins now reach the brain, and they wreak havoc. They destroy whatever they encounter. So the effect of that
is... They wreak the havoc of the nerve endings. They take out a lot of...
They destroy it. They destroy it. You can see in an MRI, you'll see atrophy. If in an MRI of a person who eats that way and lives that way, you'll see that the surface layers, the neurons on the surface of the cortex, of the neocortex, is atrophied and destroyed. How does that happen? It happens through liver clogging itself up with toxins, too low levels of antioxidants in the blood, toxins.
And then the free radicals, I guess, which are very available in the burned food, right? You have
yes.
all that burn, eating right. burn, eating fried stuff.
Right. And then you couple that with the psychological stance of beat. There's no way out. I might as well eat myself to death. Well, there you go. That's the depressed. That's depression.
But I'm having a Snapple iced tea with it, so I must be
I
okay.
might as well, because
I may as well,
because
now
cares?
I'm eating healthy. It's only tea.
Yeah, right. But I mean, yes. I mean, and then also you can sense it, Armand. When people have made that choice, you can sense it. There is a smell to them. There is a look to them. There is an aura about them. You can tell that they have chosen to surrender to this outer tyrant that becomes an inner tyrant.
Yeah, the rebellion kind of disappears. And families, you have family days at these places where the entire family goes as nicely behaved people. They go to these different centers and they have these different fast food places and they go and they have their dose.
And
Of depressants,
yes. And there is something about that. They all look so obedient, don't they? Obedient mm-hmm. to, you know, a system that is destroying them while it's feeding them this stuff that for a moment gives them that little bit of relief.
And right, because for the little bit of relief, whatever anxiety you feel, mm-hmm. once you swallow that burger or eat that fried chicken and you get it down your gullet, for a little while it's going to pass all the taste buds saying salt, sugar,
yep.
fat, you know, that's good. And then right. it's going to get down to your belly and your metabolism's going to drop.
Right.
And you're going to say, ah, I'm safe
you know,
for that moment.
You just said something very, very interesting, but let's take it up when we come back.
We're going to have to take a short break, my friends. When we come back, a little special music for you. And then we'll return with this discussion on depression with me and Roberta Atti.
WBAI New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM.
Thank you.
Enigma, Beyond the Invisible. And that's from La Femme Nikita, the TV series, believe it or not. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. We're here talking about depression, and we're talking about the evolution of depression, following up on yesterday's program where we spoke with Andrew Solomon, who wrote the incredible book, The Noonday Demon, The Nature of Depression. We're going to continue this for another day after this. We're talking about some of the depression as a strategy of evolution, of how you got by. We're talking about even a current strategy. Gilbert, is this Gilbert of Gilbert and Sullivan? No, this is Dr. Lewis Gilbert of the Association for... Say it again. You got it.
It's Paul Gilbert, and he is Paul Gilbert is the writer of this book called An Evolutionary Approach to Mood Disorder and Their Therapy.
Okay. Now, he inventoried 10 different submissive strategies that have been observed in most social the most social of species. Escape, right? That's one way of submitting. That's one way. If you get beaten, you could escape. Ambivalent defense. What do you think ambivalent defense means?
Ambivalent defense means that you defend yourself, but since you know that it's not going to work, you also have a tendency towards surrendering, so that you're not quite set in your defense. When someone
you're not fighting back, you're covering up, hoping you don't get too beaten.
Have you ever seen those monkeys that make a lot of noise but they run away? You know, when they're angry, scared, they may look aggressive, but they don't. But they're not actively attacking like that.
There's arrested flight. There's loss of control, which is avoidance. There's defeat, enclosed avoidance, reverted escape, infantilism, affiliative alliance,
which is the Swedish the you know the one.
What's her name's going? They supposedly go through the Stockholm syndrome.
Yes, that one. Yes, that's the affiliative alliance where you buddy up with the oppressor, which is the one thing I wanted to say before the break when we were talking about the eating foods that are the perfect kind of food to eat to get depressed. We were describing how not only those are the food that are available for people who are supposed to be depressed, who are selected for depression, but those are also the foods that those people will choose. And I was going to say, you know, it's a way of surrendering to the system. It's saying, okay, you feed me this burger, which I know is not good for me, but feels good. And so I'm going to be obedient, and I'm going to eat this burger and be good. Because as long as I can have my burger at any time for $1.50, I don't have to fight. I'm being fed.
See, in a way, I see so many parents, because I am a psychotherapist, and I see so many families with a depressed child, and they don't understand, why is this kid depressed? You've taken the fight out of the child. Now, the fight in the child does not mean if the child is an aggressive, defiant child who wants to beat up its parents, you've still taken the fight out of the child. Somehow this child believes that it does not have the fight necessary to get through in life. So it's either going to become manic, which is what you get from these defiant personality disorders, or it's going to get depressed. And it just means whoever you are, even though you're a parent, you may have tried your best. Very often, most often, it didn't work out so well. The kid got the message. Now, what happens? There's another form of depression that we want to talk about, which has to do with the dominant. Because once you're on the top, I guess you're manic, right? Once you're...
Well, these are called subroutines, meaning the mood behaviors that individuals engage in after the conflict. There's a conflict that establishes who's the dominant and who is not, who's the winner and who's the loser. After the conflict, which usually happens quickly. You know, Armand, when you see two people fighting, it's usually an exchange of yelling and screaming, and then it's finished. There's an immediate establishment, usually, of who is dominant and who won. After that happens, there's a chemistry that sets in, and this is called a subroutine. There's a chemistry that sets in for the winner, there's the chemistry of mania, and for the loser, there's the chemistry of depression that sets in. Now, there's a different kind of depression, we could call depression, that happens in dominant individuals who are dominant in terms of the way that they've developed their nervous system throughout their life, and then all of a sudden are removed from their environment. There's a loss of territory or control in one way or another, whereby this person can no longer express dominance in the way that they have been expressing.
You might think of it as, you know, the head of the tribe who gets challenged by a younger one,
right.
And you just get a little too old and he beats you up.
Right.
And now he says to you, you could stay in the tribe, but you're no longer in charge and I'm the top guy.
Right.
Or you could think of a guy who gets downsized in his profession, you know. He's a great person. He's the head of a mechanical field. And some youngster comes along who's in charge of computers, who knows how to do his job and 10 other jobs 10 times better because of new developments. And so they replace him mm-hmm. with the upstart.
Yeah.
Or there is this retirement. This whole idea of retiring or early retirement, which is a real killer, because I've seen so much depression with people who take early retirement. What does it say? It says you're no longer vital. So this is one
right.
that leads to a depression.
There's another one that I want to mention that is in families where, let's say that there's been a divorce and the children of the first marriage now they have to cope with the children of the second partner, who, because now this is the partner that is the favorite one, have a higher rank in the family system. Well, the child who was there before, who has lost a parent, also loses status in the hierarchy of the children, even though he may be older. That's another thing that can cause depression in a child.
Well, similarly, Roberta, you know, when you have somebody who's an only child and then they get another child in the family,
right.
if they get replaced, they right. become the only child, and the way they maintain themselves is by being good, just like the people eating the McDonald's hamburgers in Harlem.
True.
Right? And
yes.
what do? They become mommy's helper and daddy's helper.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them are depressed. And there's a kind of depression among older men, especially the older boys of a family.
Yes.
When you look at them, there's a kind of a dullness and a kind of a depression in them that's really hard to touch. But it's because they lost first position and they had to adjust themselves accordingly. Here's another one that's really amazing.
Or they may have lost, if not the first position, they may have lost... they may have lost the resources, like a bankruptcy or a loss of, you know, a loss of if you get in an accident and all of a sudden you can't move your legs.
Or a disease or an illness,
disease,
sure.
You know, so that you're still a dominant individual, so you're not depressed in the sense that you are obedient and you've given up your way of being, but you're depressed in the sense that your dominance no longer allows you to take on as much responsibility as you used to.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Acci. We're here with you on WBAI 99.5 FM. We're talking about depression. We're talking about the evolution of depression and some of the different forms of depression. Roberta is a health consultant and a very knowledgeable scientist. She co-hosts with me on Wednesdays, and Roberta has a website. You can find more information on creativehealthsolutions.org.
It's creativehealthsolutions with an S at the end,
.org.
No, not .com.
I know. I kept saying .com for a long time.
.org. So, wait,
let me finish this one, okay? You're a guy. You're a dominant guy. You meet a beautiful person. You meet, let's say you're a man and you meet a beautiful woman, and you're a guy who plays the field and you're all around town, and you're a woman who is highly desired and you're beautiful and every man wants you. So you're a dominant woman meets a dominant man. And you've had your choice of any man and you've had your choice of any woman, and then you get married and you say to yourself, okay, now I've got to have only one woman. And she says, I've got to have only one man. Well, chemistry now.
Mm-hmm.
Now you say to
yourself, that's a tough one.
You say to yourself as a man, I'm married. How am I going to do it? Mm-hmm. How am I going to do it? I love this person. How am I going to be faithful to her? How am I going to honor her? How am I going to be only with her? And you fight. And one of the things you find that men do is they go to internet pornography because they're going to have their many women, but they won't be cheating on their wives. Mm-hmm. They look at things, you know, they imagine things. They have that, but they're still trying to maintain this. Or what they will do is go to alcohol or go to food.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you see the husband who was this gorgeous guy, you know, and as he gets older and older, he puts on some weight and he's kind of going numb because he's trying. He's the dominant who's trying to keep that charge in check.
Right.
Out of the love for the person that he wants to share his life with.
Right.
Then comes this period of time in every animal, and I want to once mention what happens to a wolf when you do this. If you take a wolf who's a dominant wolf and you cage it, the wolf will be in a cage, and it will be angry, and it will have to depress itself to be able to stay in that cage without ripping at the bars with its teeth. But you let that wolf out, and that wolf will go back to being dominant. Take the man who has been married, and he's been a dominant guy, and he gets married, and then you put him in this, he cages himself, he tries to suppress himself, as men do. And you do that, and you bring yourself down to a real level, and then suddenly comes this day in their lives, and it usually happens around the age 60. They decide to buy a Jaguar, right? Now they buy a Jaguar, and now suddenly start flirting with the secretary who's at work. Then they have these small relationships, and suddenly they get their hair implants, and they're trying to recapture youth, and you see this desperate fight to come back to their dominance. And we call it midlife crisis, and we don't understand it. And what it is a desperate struggle for vitality, which if it were understood, and the couple understood it, they would be able to survive it. But instead, it's seen as bad behavior, and the guy's lost by himself. He doesn't know what's taking over in his mind. But it's a struggle by the mind to reestablish this which he used to know associated with life, which was the vibrancy of being dominant rather than death, which is the passivity.
And, of course, the body follows the mind, not the other way around. So when the mind goes into this kind of state, like what Armand is describing, the body is going to follow, meaning the body is going to choose those foods that support that choice. And if the choice is one of depression, if the choice is one of giving up, the body is going to choose the foods that are going to allow for that. And if the choice is one of fighting, then the body is going to choose the foods that are going to support the fight. But what we're saying is that if for survival, fighting is not the best choice, even a dominant individual may give that up.
Right, and he may, in fact, slow his metabolism.
And slow his metabolism,
so
right.
That what happens is he's no longer burning fuel as efficiently.
And choose foods that cause us a slowing down of the metabolism. And I believe that's true for women in menopause as well.
Tell me about that. What
well,
do you think?
I do believe that women in menopause, you know, for many women, it comes a time when you kind of look at your life and you have to make certain decisions and you have to really assess what am I going to do with what's left of my life. And if making a certain choice is difficult because it would imply, for instance, breaking a relationship, walking away from a 25-year marriage or leaving children or whatever that is, the woman is going to choose foods that are going to slow down her metabolism, tone her down, depress her, and, you know, so to prevent the breakup that could happen if she allowed herself to use the menopause as a way to express herself more with more freedom, which could actually happen. Actually, at menopause, the hormonal system changes in such a way that a woman could be reborn in her femininity and in her enjoyment of her own sexuality and life. But because there is a loss, there's a threat of a loss of the family and everything that the woman has acquired up to that point, the woman goes the other route, which is the route of depression and the route of gaining the weight and slowing down and giving up. And there's really a fork there. The other one that we only have a couple of minutes, but there's one more that we want to mention, Armand, the search and wait strategy. Can
yes.
I mention that one? Well, I mean, I do all this work of research. I just want to put it all in if I can. The search and wait is fascinating. It's when an individual has an ambition. Let's say a child is born gifted with music, with a musical sense, but for whatever reason the family cannot afford music lessons, cannot afford, you know, the expense, so the child cannot learn music. That child remains a musical person, but does not have a way to express that talent through playing an instrument or singing, whatever. So now what has to happen is the brain and nervous system have to actively curtail and remove, prune out those neurons and dendrites and nervous system cells that would have developed naturally as a result of this spontaneous attraction towards music. So, and the child has to, you know, like a bonsai. A bonsai would like to grow in a certain way, but you twist it and prune it and cut it and contain it and shape it the way you want to develop. And yes, it can end up being really beautiful, but it's not what it would have been originally. This is kind of like what happens to the nervous system of a child who cannot express his or her natural talent. So if investing energy in the pursuit of music does not serve the interest of the group, of the family, and therefore of the individual will go into a depression that curtails that need in order to serve the greater need of the group. So that's called the search and wait.
That's really interesting
depression.
Because one of the ways that we interview people when we interview them is we look at thinking styles, and sometimes we find creative people with no creative outlets.
Oh, that's most painful.
And when we find people who have creative minds mm-hmm. but have no creativity, no creative outlets, we see depression.
Of course.
It's the formula for depression. One of the things we do is we reintroduce creativity, but it's not the original creativity, because
no,
if a person wanted to be a singer or a dancer when they were five, it's real different. You know,
right.
They may have squelched it and they may have gotten depressed.
And actually pursuing that could lead to a worsening
further
of
depression, especially when you try to do auditions, you know,
right.
at age 48 or
exactly.
something for ballet.
So that's not a good idea.
You know?
But it is a good idea to pursue something creative that allows for a growth of some neuron in that
You know,
direction.
I have never seen a case, Roberta, of someone, I've treated thousands of people with depression over the years. A number of times I've directed people back to school. I say, get back into university, get back into college,
yeah.
finish your degree, get a PhD, get your MA, get your BA, whatever you're going to do. And I've never met a person who ever completed their schooling after coming in, after having given up on it.
Mm-hmm.
Who didn't feel gratitude, great
yep,
gratitude
absolutely.
For having done that.
Absolutely.
Because
sure.
you get them back, and if you get them back on a learning track, they become vital beings again.
And you know, this is going to sound really simplistic, but I'm going to say it anyway. Sometimes the best way for some individuals to deal with depression is something like learn a new language. Get your mind to focus on something that is not difficult and yet requires focus like that, even if it's not interesting. But by the time it's 6 months are passed by, you'll know how to speak somewhat that new language, but you're sprouting neurons. That's what learning a new language does. It sprouts neurons, and that's what counteracts the physical symptoms of depression.
Hey, you always wanted to learn French? I've got an idea for you. There is a website, and if you write to me, I'll send it to you. There's a website that offers you a free word, one word of French every day. One word.
Hey, I can do that.
And so every day they mail you a word, and you learn a new word, M-O-T.
M-O-T,
right? You get a new word, and you learn it. And I tell you something, it's one of the most welcome things in my mailbox.
Yeah.
I never pass it by. It's some amazing stuff. Hey, if you want to get in touch with me, if you want to send it, you could look at the new website, brand new website.
It's beautiful.
Armand at brainlink.com will lead you to the new website. And also send me an email, armand@brainlink.com. Oh, no, it's Armand at the positive. It's thepositivemind.com is the website.
Right, thepositivemind.com. Right, and it's armand@brainlink.com
to send me an email.
No,
about
armand@brainlink.
At brainlink.com.
Oh, yes, at brainlink.com. Sorry.
The depression, Roberta.
It must be. Wait, let me say something. Yes, I have all kinds of things going on. I'm going to put them in my website, and my website is it's long, but it's not difficult, creativehealthsolutions.org. I'm going to post all my new things, groups, and everything I'm doing in my website.
Hey, best to all of you. We'll be back to you next. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with some more interesting stuff about depression. I think I'm going to be looking at dealing with impulses that come up when you're depressed. And thank you, Roberta.
Thank you, Armando. It was very interesting and nice to be here.